time once again for Community Forum, and we are very lucky to have with us live in the studios this morning Shiloh Murphy. Shiloh Murphy is co-founder and executive director at the People's Harm Reduction Alliance, and in here to talk about his organization and the University District Needle Exchange. Shiloh, thank you very much for coming in and spending time with us this morning.
You're welcome.
So, start out, tell us about the People's Harm Reduction Alliance.
So, the People's Harm Reduction Alliance is a 501c nonprofit. Our website is thepeoplesharmreductionalliance.org. You should go there to buy a t-shirt. We run a syringe exchange, and our syringe exchange is actually quite old at 24 years. And if your listeners don't know what a syringe exchange is, it is a place where someone who uses injection drugs can go and get a clean syringe. And why would they get a clean syringe? Because a insulin syringe is dull after one use, and so it can start doing damage to your veins and body. It also, because of blood, you will have HIV and hepatitis C. You could also get abscesses from using old needles. And so in, I believe, 84 in Holland, drug users figured out that if they give clean syringes, they can help their friends from stopping the spread of hepatitis B. It wasn't HIV at that time, and researchers found that for some reason Holland had the lowest HIV rates in Europe when they started researching that stuff, and they realized it was connected to syringe exchange. And in 88, a man named Dave Purchase decided to start a syringe exchange in the great city of Tacoma. You've got to be first for something. And he started the first legal needle exchange in the state, or in our state, which is also the first one in our country. And really quickly after that, they started doing ACT UP. A HIV activist group said they wanted to do one in downtown Seattle, and they invited many people to be a part of it, one of which was named Bob Quinn, and he was doing hospice care for HIV patients, and he was tired of his people he loved and cared for dying, and he decided to do something about it, and they started the Downtown Needle Exchange. Well, he's not from downtown. He was from the University District. And if you knew Bob Quinn, he was a very loving, caring person, but also had a very snarky edge to him. And if you told him he could not do something, that was the one thing he was going to do. And the health department told him that there were no drug users in the University District. The Chamber of Commerce told him that it wasn't feasible to do a syringe exchange in the University District. And so he set up in front of the Old Tower Records, which was across the street from the University Bookstore, next to the PC Then table, which at the time was an activist group in the University District area. Most of the PC Thens started HempFest and went on to work with HempFest for many, many years. And so he set up a syringe exchange. He walked around for about 6 months to 8 months asking people if they needed syringes to find out if there was actually a need there, and there was. And his table started in the first year. It gave out 450 syringes, and today it gives out 3 million syringes, the largest needle exchange in the country. We are community-run. We are participants. Tell us their needs and wants, and we provide whatever they need. We have active participants on our board of directors, on our staff, on as volunteers. So, yeah, that's a little brief history. We've gone through lots of different changes. The People's Harm Reduction Alliance came about when the public health department tried to shut down street outreach service, and therefore there was no one running the University District Needle Exchange, and myself, Jeff Corey, and Tom Fitzpatrick all were staff at the Needle Exchange and decided to do something to save our program, and we did it. And everyone will tell you reasons why you cannot do something and very few people will tell you reasons you can do something, and the programs that survive are the ones that are done by people who won't take no for an answer and follow their hearts and find the hills they intend to die on and create long, sustainable programs. We were not the first Neil Exchange. We will not be the last Neil Exchange. But we will always follow our hearts, and we will always take the knowledge and experience of the drug users which we serve to give their lives just a little better place. And, yeah, that's my short answer.
How did you get involved with the Needle Exchange?
Well, I was someone who used the syringe exchange, and I would come and get syringes from Bob Quinn when he ran it, and I asked if there was any volunteer options because I was tired of my friends dying of overdoses, and I saw the stigma and oppression people had towards drug users and homeless people, and I wasn't going to take it anymore, and so I asked all the nonprofits in the neighborhood if I could volunteer, and all of them laughed at me. They say, we're not going to take a homeless drug addict. Why would we take you? You're worthless to us. And Bob Quinn said, yeah, you got to show up at 5 o'clock on Wednesday, and you can volunteer. And I was so excited. Showed up at 5. I did my shift. And then the next shift, I came back and I was 15 minutes late. And he said, no, you clearly misunderstood what I was saying. I said 5 o'clock, not 5:15, 5 o'clock. And it became like the big, it was one of the big first responsibilities I had in my life. And it changed my life. And he kind of slowly adopted me as his son. And he's like a father to me. And it broke our hearts when he passed away on November 4th of last year. And so I am there because someone cared for me when no one else would. And I have dedicated my life to the Neil Exchange program because it itself saved me. Not just the health prevention services that it provided, but the fact that it told me that I was loved and told me that I was cared for when there was so much other stigma around drug use.
So talk about some of the hurdles that drug users have to deal with that your organization helps them overcome.
Well, one of the things about the drug war is it has declared war on a population. And a lot of countries have a hard time dealing with this. There are more homogenized countries that have a much more difficult problem demonizing a segment of its population. In our country, we seem to be okay with demonizing populations. We have racism, we have homophobia, we have sexism, we have ageism. And with dealing with drugs, if you tell your friend you're a drug user, and specifically if you tell them you are an injection drug user, the responses are either that you're evil or you have to quit today. And in the Neil Exchange, we tell them that they're loved and that they should be proud of who they are today. And they should always be able to look in the mirror and say, I love this person and I'm proud of this person. And it sounds very woo-woo hippie, but it's incredibly important to someone who is told how evil and disgusting they are each and every day to be told that they're loved. And we have people come and they burst into tears when we tell them they're loved because no one has told them that. And we give them hugs and we inform them that they are community members and they're the experts within their community that can provide a deeply needed service. We have always felt that each community should be able to decide its own destiny, its own services. And, we as drug users are going to take care of our drug-using brothers and sisters. And so I always feel that that is the most important service that we do. We do lots of other things that are incredibly important. But telling drug users that they're human beings and that we love them and that their life is not worthless and their life is worth something. In fact, it's a precious life that, you know, my heart breaks every time a drug user dies because we've lost a community member and we've lost a great asset to our neighborhood in the University District. So I guess that is one of the things that people can come and, you know, parents ask me all the time, what do you do when my son tells me that they're a drug user? I respond that you tell them that they are loved and that you love them. And if you have a truly honest dialogue with someone about their drug use, people change their behavior naturally. If things interfere with their lives, people change their behavior. And not all drug users are addicts. Not to say there are not some drug users who end up to be addicts. The vast majority of drug users use once and never use again, or use on the weekends, or, you know, use once a month. And there's many different drugs to use that have many different effects that people desire. People, I think, forget that alcohol is a drug. People seem to be okay with doing cocaine in the bathroom of a bar, but less so about smoking cocaine, even though it's the same drug, has different stigmas on it. Injecting is no different. There are people who inject once and end up having a long, struggled life with addiction. There is people who inject once and say, wow, that's really not for me. I don't know why people use that. So I think it's really complicated. And this is totally a tangent that I will go on to. The drug war, I really believe, has hurt our society in a very dramatic way. I am a drug user. I grew up in the streets of the U District. I consider myself a U District community member. I'm very proud of the neighborhood I've come from. I think the U District is the best neighborhood in the world. And I have witnessed hundreds, if not thousands, of violent crimes. And I am unlikely to have ever called the police department on that because I have been so abused by them. I've been told I'm evil. I have been thrown up against the wall to be searched because of drugs. And so when I witness a violent crime, the police officers are not the people I would call because I don't consider them allies and friends to my community. Now, how does that help me? It doesn't really help me. And it doesn't really help the police department either, because in all the research they've done, they've shown that 20% of lifelong criminals are people who do criminal acts commit 80% of the violent crimes. So a small portion of people who are even committing, breaking the law, are actually committing violent crimes. And you want those people who are consistently going to do violent crimes to see a jail cell. And how is that going to help when you have alienated a portion of your community? In fact, you've alienated the portion of the community that is the most typically most impoverished and the ones that are on the street corner at all times, who have the eyes and the ears, who don't want to see violence, but what are they going to do? The police aren't going to help them. The police are the ones who harass them. So how has that helped the University District, the drug war? How has that made the neighborhood a better place? And I'm not saying there are not problems with drugs, but dealing with it as a health issue and dealing with it as people, the small percentage of people who commit crimes to get drugs, that can be dealt with through people getting arrested for committing those crimes. But dealing with the simple possession of drugs of a homeless person, that doesn't help the neighborhood. In fact, that makes animosity in the neighborhood, and that puts wedges in the neighborhood. And so I would say my neighborhood is less safe because of the drug war, not more safe.
Talk about the Urban Survivors Union and how that relates to the drug war.
So the Urban Survivors Union is a collection of drug users who formed their own union. And it was designed to be a political force to change the drug war. And the People's Harm Reduction Alliance, when we started doing the Neil Exchange in 2007, now the University District Neil Exchange was started in 89 by Bob Quinn, and it went through lots of different changes, and now we're the nonprofit that runs it. We decided that we were not going to be like a bureaucratic system. We were going to be a human rights organization for drug users that happens to do health prevention. And that's a big sea change. So we decided that we were going to do this great service and do all of this, you know, changing of the laws and, you know, doing rallies. And we realized that direct service really bogged us down. And it didn't bog us down in a negative way. We just did a really good direct service, and that's what we did well. And so a collection of us decided to form the Urban Survivors Union, which was going to be entirely an organization dedicated to ending the drug war through education and by specifically involving drug users and putting drug users in the helm of the civil rights movement. Gay rights would have not happened if you had a whole bunch of straight folks saying that we think gay people should have equal rights. It happened because gay men and women fought for their own individual rights, came out of the closet and said, I'm gay and I'm proud and I'm not going anywhere. And it's the same concept we had with the Urban Survivors Union, that people needed to come out and say, hey, I'm a drug user and I'm not afraid of it and I'm not an evil person. For example, I co-founded the Urban Survivors Union, and I'm a drug user, and I'm an executive director of a nonprofit, and I live a long, productive life. In fact, I challenge people to be more of a workaholic than I am. So I know that drugs have actually bettered my life, not made it worse. I know that I'm not the only one, and so we created the Urban Survivors Union. Gary Lee Smith and Courtney Chaos co-founded it with me. And we have general meetings on Thursday, the first and third Thursday of the month, in the University Temple Methodist Church at the Neil Exchange office. And we have different projects. And drug users take full responsibility of the treasury position, the secretary position. They are in charge of all the projects. So if you can achieve that, then I think people need to stop putting too much stigma on drug users, because they can not only run their service, but they can run their own lobby force now.
All right. You did a talk a couple weeks back about Narcan. Talk about Narcan.
So Narcan is an opiate antagonist. And so if you are having an opiate overdose, you can take Narcan. Likely someone's going to be giving it to you, because if you're truly in an overdose, you're not in a capacity to give Narcan to yourself. And someone can give you Narcan, and within close to around 3 minutes, it can reverse the overdose by becoming an opiate blocker, for your opiate kind of receptors. Therefore, you go immediately out of an overdose, including going, if you have a habit, someone who uses consistently, you can go into immediate withdrawals. So, but you are alive, and that's the point. And so it can last between 60 and 90 minutes, and you can still overdose again once it wears off, so you always have to kind of watch the person. And we give out Narcan or Naloxone at our program in the U District, and it's behind the post office of the U District, and we're open Tuesday and Thursday, 5 to 7, and Friday and Sunday, 1 to 5, and the post office is on 43rd and University Way, if anyone wanted to know, and you can get this substance to stop your overdose. And when we started handing it out, I kind of burst into tears, because I knew so many people who died of overdose. So many people I grew up on the streets are gone because of overdose. And now we have the means, a life-saving medicine that costs $1. So My question is a life worth $1? Because that's all it takes to save a life. And stigma is killing drug users because people are using alone in their house because they're afraid to tell their neighbors or their friends. And so when someone tells you they're a drug user, especially an opiate user, you have the means to save their lives, and you have to decide if you want them to live or die because they need someone to be with them when they use. So it's really powerful that we hand it out, and anyone can come and get it, especially people who use legal opiates like Oxycontin or fentanyl. They can be naloxone can work for them, and they actually have a higher overdose rate than an injection drug user. I would encourage anyone who takes opiates or has a grandma who takes opiates to get naloxone from our organization.
Yeah, so it's like this wonder drug.
It is, and it has no real side effects. The only side effects I've ever read was if you had taken over 10 doses, and you don't want to take 10 doses because they would make you really, really sick. So
this is something that people can get through your organization?
Yes, you can get through our organization, and you can. It only takes, it's like a two-minute training, and you can have your own Narcan kit that you can leave in your bathroom, always have on you. I think everyone should have it. It's super easy to use. It's just a 1cc injection. So, yeah.
So, and it does require a needle to be able to give it to someone. So
it does. But and we provide those needles. It also is light sensitive, so you have to keep it in the black baggie.
And you mentioned at your talk, this is something that you foresee in everybody's medicine cabinet as well as like organizations.
Yeah, I feel if you, as long as we're giving out opiates, everyone should have it. It should be in everyone's medicine cabinet. Everyone should know how to use it. Everyone should. There's no one who shouldn't. I mean, if you know of any place that you would like me to do a talk or a training at your facility, I'm happy to do that. My number is 206-330-5777, and I can come and do a training at your place, and everyone should have it. I can't stress that because it's the difference between life and death, and we are prescribing more and more opiates, and we'll be prescribing more and more opiates in the future, and we're designing stronger and stronger opiates in the future that's going to take larger and larger amounts of naloxone to stop. And I don't know the exact set, but people said the majority of households in the state of Washington have some either old or expiring or active opiates in there, whether it be a Vicodin or an Oxycontin. And if you have that on you in your cabinet, you should have the thing that will save your life if you take too much.
So just 5 minutes left. So since prescribed opiates are so common now, how would you describe what an overdose looks like? I don't think everybody knows that.
Well, an overdose, simple thing, an overdose is someone who is not moving and not breathing. So with opiates, you get so relaxed, your body forgets to breathe. And then you kind of suffocate, and then everything else starts failing quickly. People will say they have, like, turn blue because they're basically not getting enough oxygen. And so realistically, an overdose is someone who's not moving. And it's hard to describe when you're not seeing me, but if you take your knuckles and you push them on the center of your chest and you rub up and down hard, it's going to be annoying enough to someone to say, stop, right? And if they say stop, they are still alive. If they do not say stop and not have any responses, it's because they are becoming incapacitated. And so that's when you would start considering using naloxone. Also, kind of shaking them a little and letting, you know, yelling their names will also help if they respond. And, you know, then it's to the next step of start giving them naloxone.
Now, would you recommend people, if they're dealing with someone they believe is overdosed, that they call 911? We'll help arrive in time where they don't have to do this, or is this something that they need to definitely intervene with?
Well, if you call 911 and you live in Enumclaw and the emergency service is going to be so much farther away, they will likely die before the emergency service gets there. And that's not because we have bad emergency service. We, in rural areas, they just are, they don't get there as fast because there's not a hospital next to you. If I dropped dead from an overdose on 45th and University Way, the medical staff is going to be 3 to 5 minutes, and my life is going to be saved. So I would encourage people to call 911 and inform them that your friend is not breathing, because if you call the police, if you tell them it's an overdose, the police will come. We do have a Good Samaritan law that gives you some protection if you call for a simple possession, some immunity with that. So I would definitely use naloxone. If you have naloxone, that's the thing that's probably going to save their life. And the EMTs, that's what they're going to use anyway. So there is some complications, and there could be some other issues, so you may want to call 911. But again, in the rural areas, they're unlikely to make it to you. So that's why how important it is to use naloxone. The other thing, just as a community event, we are having Founders Day celebrating the life in Bob Quinn and the University District Neo Exchange, and that will be on August 4th, and it will be in the alleyway where the Neo Exchange is. And if you have a little extra money and you enjoy Thai food, that night we'll have a fundraiser at 65 Thai, and it'll be $20, and you will get a buffet of all-you-can-eat Thai food. You'll get to listen to me speak, and you'll get to listen to Vivian McPeak from HempFest speak, and we will do a little trivia game to test your knowledge of harm reduction and drugs, and you can win lots of T-shirts and some prizes. So you should totally come, and that's August 4th at 65 Thai. It starts at 7, and then the barbecue and celebration will start at noon in the alleyway.
All right, just about a minute left. So how can people find out more about your organization and the Needle Exchange?
Two important things. One, you can go to the website at peoplesharmreductionalliance.org. And the second is you can volunteer and engage your community. We have lots of different volunteer spots. We only have one paid position, and that's me. And then everything else is done by volunteers, and they're the backbone of our service. And there are people there who work many hours for no thanks and no money to help keep places like us alive. And so engage your community and volunteer.
Very good. All right. Well, with that, we are unfortunately out of time. I want to thank you very much for coming and spending time with us this morning.
You're welcome. Thank you.